always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Thursday afternoon by you guys. You guys can still probably hear it a little bit in my nose and in my voice. I am still just slightly under the weather. I should be fully back and ready to go tomorrow, but that is why there was no show last night following a thrilling game. I love that game. That was so much fun. The Knicks beating the Spurs in San Antonio to take game one of the NBA Finals so far. And from that game, I came to a realization. I came to an epiphany. It is an epiphany I am not proud of. It is an epiphany that I would hopefully like to be talked out of at some point, whether that be in today's show, whether that be in tomorrow's show when I talk to Pete. But I think the Lakers should consider trading for Miles Turner. Unbelievable. Here we are. Time is a flat circle. So today in the show, what we're going to do is recap that game last night as the Knicks beat the Spurs and how they went about doing so. I'm going to make the case for generic, stretch five, who I think the Lakers should be targeting, or that archetype. And then because of the market and because of, just generally speaking, how few playoff playable bigs there are who can knock down three-pointers, I'm going to make the case for, or let alone, that are on the market as well. I'm going to make the case for Miles Turner specifically. And so, we have all of that to get to. And then, over the course of the show, I'm sure you guys have questions and comments. I already see it here. Daily Meditation saying we need a rim protector. I agree. Lakers need one of those too. But I think that Turner does an okay-ish job at that, while also doing an important job on the other side of the court and in pulling the other team's rim protector out away from the rim. And I think that's just as important. So we'll talk about that as well. We just got a super comment here. So I will answer comments and super comments over the course of the show, at the tail end of the show, all of that good stuff. And I guess let's dive on in. It's like Thanos, right? You do all the I am inevitable or whatever. You go through all of that and you always come right back to me. Miles Turner is Lakers Thanos, apparently. All right. Quick reminder before we dive in, subscribe, like button, share button. If you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, subscribe to your podcast there. Today's show, as are all of our shows, is brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and make and set a lineup for $5 on Prize Picks and then get $50 worth of free Prize Picks lineups on Prize Picks. So we will hopefully see you guys on that. Their platform. Actually, I think you can follow Lakers Lounge on Prize Picks, I believe. All right, so let's dive on in. Let's start with last night's game. The story of it was that, neither team shot the ball particularly well. Both teams, it wasn't one of those feel-out games. I thought both teams were really giving it a go. I thought the Knicks kind of lacked rhythm, and they've been off for however long, 9 days, I think. The Knicks had been off, and they kind of looked like it offensively. Defensively, they really got after it. And then the Spurs, they looked tired. They looked like they just got off of a brutal seven-game series, mostly because they just got out of and survived a brutal seven-game series against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I thought, you know, the Spurs were leaving a lot of shots short. I thought that the Knicks were, didn't quite know where their shots were going to come from. But the Knicks did enough to hang around and hang around and hang around. And then it got to the fourth quarter and Jalen Brunson happened. And that was a really fun fourth quarter there from Jalen Brunson. Also thought OG Anunoby hit some timely shots in that fourth quarter. I really liked the Knicks like balanced effort here. Like Karl Anthony Towns had 18 points and 12 rebounds and was significantly better than that over the course of the game. Josh Hart had one of the best, one of the best 3-point games that you're going to see in a finals game. Already talked about Brunson. Mikal Bridges, somewhat quiet, I thought, in that game, offensively. But I thought, you know, the Knicks only gave up 95 points to a Spurs team that has been scoring on basically everybody. So the Knicks were really, really good. I like the Knicks coming into this matchup. I could explain why if you're interested in it. Actually put a few donut dollars on the Knicks to win this series. I think you were at plus 140 or something like that. And I took that opportunity. But the Knicks, they were really, really physical with Wemby. I don't think Wemby ever looked particularly comfortable out there. I thought Dylan Harper presented some issues early for the Knicks, but I thought, I mentioned Mikal Bridges, how he only scored the 9 points, had a relatively quiet game offensively, but I thought defensively, those Knicks wings eventually, played physically enough with the Spurs, younger guards. I thought coming into the series, because you looked in that Thunder series and the Spurs guards were all like as big or bigger than most of the guards who were guarding them, whether it be Steph Castle, whether it be De'Aaron Fox is a bigger point guard. Obviously, Dylan Harper is a really big point guard. But against the Knicks, unless they were guarded by like an Alvarado or a Deuce McBride, or I think that's just, I guess, Brunson also. Outside of that, those same guards / wings are looking across and they're being guarded by a Mikal Bridges. They're being guarded by a Josh Hart. They're being guarded by an OG Anunoby. And I thought that size with the main lineups there was something that the Spurs are going to have to get back used to. Or try to get used to. The one thing that I'm really going to look for, I don't love New York's bench a whole bunch. They are still very top heavy as a roster. And now Mitchell Robinson came in, gave decent minutes, but I'm Shamet was a huge part of the Knicks' success to this point. But outside of that, like the Clarkson minutes, I would be nervous for throughout if I were a Knicks fan. Miles McBride's Deuce McBride is a football player, isn't he? But no, Deuce Deuce is his nickname. Duh. But Deuce comes in there. He gave some solid minutes, I would say. But overall, the Knicks just looked a lot better when their main five-man lineup was out there. And then, for the Spurs, De'Aaron Fox was brutal last night. Just a really, really bad game for Fox. Julian Champagne was pretty good really good in the first half, pretty bad in the second. And then, Victor Wembanyama looked a little timid out there. Stephon Castle had a pretty good game. Devin Vassell was kind of sort of absent in that one. And then Dylan Harper, like I said, was good early and then kind of tailed off and then eventually like didn't pl- play a whole bunch late, and that was kind of odd. But anyway, my takeaway, you know, in watching all of this, and you look at like the types of teams that have had success here in the playoffs, one of the pitches that they can all throw is five out. And you know, the Knicks can do that. You know, and yes, Josh Hart isn't the best shooter, but he's, you know, willing if he's wide open. And for the Lakers, like, you know, they would need to get more athletic to be able to pull this off. The Knicks are very switchable, or, you know, switchy across their main lineup outside of Towns. And even Towns moved his feet really well, I thought, in last night's game. But like all of these teams, you know, they're able to, you know, stretch the floor to the point where they're pulling that anchor big out onto the perimeter. And that creates some creases in the opposing shell. And I think for the Lakers next year, that is going to have to be a pitch that they have to viably throw. And I don't mean throwing that pitch in the sense of like, well, maybe Christian Wood will knock down a couple threes. Like, no, I think you're going to really have to trust and be able to stick with whichever stretch big you go to, and you know, to be able to play this way. And you know, over the course of LeBron's tenure there, sometimes he's been the stretch five. We'll see if LeBron is back, but I think, you know, and we'll get in this next segment, we'll talk about the market for these types of players, and it's just not a great market. And that makes me, you know, come back to Miles Turner, even given some of his, you know, the frustration that comes with Miles Turner at times. So let's go ahead and get into the Lakers once again returning back to the trough that is Miles Turner trade speculation. So you kind of look at, you know, the against the Thunder. Now Chet was really bad against the Spurs, but the Thunder, you know, they are able to play five out at basically all times, because you either have Chet in like Hartenstein, like I guess he's the one guy who you can't quite play five out with, though he kind of operates at the pinch post well enough and has a good enough floater game that he still kind of provides some spacing. But you have Jalen Williams, who knocks down three-pointers. You have Chet, who was a legit three-point shooting threat from the big spots. And as a result of that, like at least in theory, the Thunder should have been able to stretch the Spurs out, kind of how the Knicks were able to last night. The difference is Shea stopped shooting three-pointers and Chet was just completely sunned by Wemby to such an extent that even he stopped shooting three-pointers. And once they stopped shooting threes against the Spurs were able to kind of hunker down. Wemby was able to stay a little closer to the basket. And if you are trying to score on the Spurs, and basically like you're trying to navigate defenders like Stephon Castle and defenders like Dylan Harper and defenders like Julian Champagne and Keldon Johnson and even Carter Bryant as a rookie and so on and so forth. Like if you're trying to navigate that perimeter shell and then you get by that group and you're only, you know, your reward for getting by that, you know, piercing that initial shell is Victor Wembanyama standing there with like, you know, the arms that stretch across the court. It's just very difficult to operate an offense that way. And I think that, you know, the Thunder, that series ended when they stopped shooting threes, and that series ended and just kind of changed as soon as Wemby was able to park it in the paint and completely wreak havoc on OKC's offense. And then in this one, you know, the reason that the Knicks were able to kind of hang around and get some timely shots and stuff like that and still have some success at the rim was because at any given time that Karl-Anthony Towns was out there, you had four or five really viable shooting threats. And like, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, Karl Anthony Towns finishes the night a plus 14 and Mitchell Robinson finishes the night a minus four. Because when Mitchell Robinson is out there, whenever he is out there, and if Wemby is also out there, Wemby just gets to hang out in the paint and contest everything that he would normally contest. But when it's Karl Anthony Towns out there, or you know, I guess it's mostly just Karl Anthony Towns. When Towns is out there, you know, Wemby does have to go out there and close out. That's why for stretches of the game, Wemby is actually guarding Josh Hart, because he's a little more reluctant a shooter than Wemby. So, yeah, I think that, you know, in you know, looking at, and same, by the way, can be said not only about the Spurs in the West, but I think the Thunder are a team that you need to stretch out and try to pierce the shell that way with. So it would help to have a stretch five there, right? Because they have either Chet, who's standing there at the rim, who's a great rim protector, or Hartenstein, we'll see if he's still there, who is a really good paint defender as well. Jalen Williams is a really good paint defender because he takes so many charges. So, like, that's something that the Lakers would need against OKC. If you have if you can go five out against the Denver Nuggets and, you know, force Jokic to defend in space, that's how you render him a kind of difficult defensive presence for the Denver Nuggets to navigate. And I think that's something that the Lakers would benefit or would stand to benefit from against that team. Against Minnesota, right, you're trying to stretch that team out and all of their size and all that physicality. And if you can get Rudy Gobert out away from the basket, that changes what that team looks like defensively. We'll see what that team actually looks like, you know. And that's the case with all of these teams, I guess. But the Lakers, as it is, they don't have great athletes, right? When it comes to you know, shiftiness and get by you type athletes, they don't have those guys. So what they need to do is make it that much easier on those guys to you know, stretch that shell that much thinner. And make it so that Austin can get by his guy a little easier, and make it so that on whatever pick and roll or if he's just going to bludgeon the opposing defense, like, that's how Luka can do it. And the other thing too, that's a big part of all this, while we're just kind of on the subject of the Lakers' need for shooting at the five spot, but another thing that I've been thinking about a whole bunch basically since the season ended and in this conversation about whether or not Luka and Austin can work long term, those guys need to get to be absolute lasers as far as 3-point shooting goes. And that's something that, like, that's honestly a real good argument for bringing Luke Kennard back and bringing Rui Hachimura back. LeBron is, you know, kind of inconsistent as a 3-point shooter. That's a bit of a concern, but when he has it going, the Lakers look like a completely different team for a reason. And so the Lakers are going to need to get athletic enough to play, you know, the type of defense that you play if you're going to have a five out lineup out there. But they also need to have the type of shooters out there who actually stretch a defense apart and make, you know, that decision on, all right, I'm guarding the strong side corner shooter. Do I pinch in and help, or do I go out there and defend the shooter? You need the kinds of shooters who keep that defender home rather than going to help a little bit more on Luka, on Austin, on LeBron if he is there. So let's talk about, you know, the market and why Miles Turner makes the most sense. After having, again, come to the realization that this is something that the Lakers need to be able to do. So look out there. Look on the market, right? You want Nikola Vucevic? Like, I guess, you know, but he didn't look honestly all that good in Boston, and He hasn't really been a playoff player for his entire career. I guess if the price is absolutely right, like I'd have to look. I think he's expiring. Nikola Vucevic. Where's his contract? Ooh. Yeah, so he is he's going to be a free agent this year. So I guess technically the Lakers could pay him, but I don't, you know, if you're going to do that, like if you're going to pay Vucevic, you kind of have to get like Kessler is a restricted free agent or Jalen Duren is a restricted free agent. Although last I heard, Duren and the Pistons both seem optimistic that they're going to work out some kind of a contract there. So I don't think Duren is going to happen, but although apparently there's some speculation out there that Isaiah Stewart might be available, and I would love me some Isaiah Stewart. Give me a crazy guy that like plays on the interior and at any given moment could knock out a player from the other team, and the other team is always aware of that. And I think Stewart can stretch the floor a little bit, not to the extent that like I'm looking for here, but he would certainly be an interesting one. And honestly, a really good rim protector too, Stewart is. So that would be somebody if the Pistons, like, you know, decide they have to shed one of their younger guys. And if Stewart is that younger guy, I would love to see the Lakers jump in at that opportunity. excuse me. But like the market, you know, there just aren't very many proven guys who you could go into the season and like even viably hope would be a playoff performer next year. And by the way, like I know that Miles Turner is inconsistent. He was honestly really bad last year. Although I think a lot of that has to do with the situation, but I think that like, you know, giving it, I don't even like making this case. Like I just feel gross. Like it's not gross. Like, it's not that I don't like Miles Turner, the player or the person or anything like that. It's just his contract sucks. Now he could probably be gotten for nothing. Like, you know, I think that like you could probably trade like one of those fake second rounders or some cash considerations to Milwaukee and get Turner. Whenever Giannis is traded this summer, I think Turner is expected to go shortly thereafter. I know Boston is in on Turner, and we'll see what they would be willing to give up for him. But I think here for the Lakers, getting somebody who like could viably, you know, did some rim protection at one point in his career, is still a much better three-point shooter and overall player than he was last year. And his contract, like 25-ish million, like I don't think it's too terrible. It's 4 years, which is kind of tough. Let's see. So yeah, so next year will be the second year of a 4-year contract. He has a player option for that fourth year. So he has like 3 years, 80 something million bucks left on that contract. That takes him through his year 32 season. It's not great. It's also not awful. You know, it's not in the 40s. The cap eventually is going to start going up again. So contract wise, like, you know, given what he could potentially provide, I wouldn't hate it too much. I would certainly wince a little bit, and I would certainly really, really hope that this thing works out. And one, like, if the Lakers are going to do this, and if they're going to, you know, use resources and cap space on bringing in a Miles Turner, they have to employ a shooting coach for next year. They just have, like, it's just, It would be unhealthy for me psychologically if the Lakers enter next year without a shooting coach, given the very, very, very crystal clear benefits that, you know, being a good shooting team brings to the table. So yeah, that's Turner specifically. Let me know what you guys think. I'm going to take a literal second here, regather my thoughts, and jump into the Q&A. I'm looking forward to talking to Pete about this tomorrow and see, maybe he'll make me feel better about it, but yeah. All right, we have a super comment here coming from Jay Cooper, which means we get to play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! Nope, hold on. Fuck Washington! All right. Also, you know, I mentioned Isaiah Stewart as somebody who could shake loose this year. Could you imagine, like, LeBron's reaction? If it's just...
What the fuck?